Thank you for joining us, and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. And again, we are celebrating Women's History Month with another very special guest. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and you're watching or listening to Answers Network. Every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, if you can't listen live, all of our shows can be found at answers.network. And I'd also really appreciate it if you'd all do me a big favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive influence in the world together. And we're going to talk a little bit about writing. And for those people that listen and that know me, they know that I'm one of those people that if I'm watching TV or if I'm watching a movie, I'm going to pause it. I'm going to talk about the writing. I'm going to say, okay, now, did you see how they did that? That was such great writing and the way in which they did it. On the other hand, I'm also one that will also point out when I feel like it's lacking something. So, and it could be that when you're watching it, that you realize that you don't really care what happens to the main character, or that it lacked heart. So you might start not liking something, but you don't really know why. Well, these are some of the reasons. But our guest's new book is going to tell us even more about that. And the book is called The Writer Who Inhabits Your Body. And it's not a book on how to write. It's a book about how to bring heart, body, and soul to your writing. Author Rene Gregorio is also a poet, longtime Aikido practitioner, and master somatic coach. And she has published 9 books of poetry and has won several writing awards and grants for her work. She teaches body-centered writing workshops across the United States, but lives in New Mexico. Rene, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you, Alan. Good to be here. Yeah.
Well, one of my first questions, as I mentioned, about kind of the way that I watch things or read things, mm-hmm. What do you do when you're watching or you're reading something? Do you find yourself either recognizing something and realizing that it's touched your heart, or at times wondering why it didn't?
Definitely. I just read. I read novels a lot. I mean, I read poetry a lot, but I really like ending my day with reading novels. And I've just finished reading Abraham Ferghese's The Covenant of Water. And it's a 700-something page novel. It's phenomenal. And I used to be, you know, a little bit afraid of entering into such a huge piece of anything, right? I didn't notice at all. And his characters and their stories were so compelling. That is certainly what I long for, right? And as a reader, is that place where you can just fully be swept into the drama, the colorfulness, it's just phenomenal gift when someone can do that.
Yeah. Well, at what point did you start to realize that you could place writing beside body awareness and practices, and that it would help you?
Yeah, I got very curious. I was a poet before I was an Aikido practitioner for probably about a decade, and then I started training in Aikido. And became immediately fascinated by the energetics of that, the ways in which it's a martial art, of course, but it's much more about learning how to blend with another person's energy and get out of the way of energy that may seem aggressive, turn it, just fascinating. And I became very, pretty quickly curious about what I was learning about myself by being across from another person on the mats, and what became an exploration, you know, of really, really myself, how I respond to energy, why I might react in a certain way, what did I need to do to expand that way of being, right? And so I started seeing similarities immediately in writing and in practicing Aikido. And so I started to put them together, just experimenting for years with, I'm going to teach an Aikido class, but I'm going to start the class by reading a poem. So I did that for a while. What happens to you as an Aikido practitioner as this poem descends on you, you know? And so I just started playing with that, those energies. Yeah.
And I love it. And I think, as I was telling you earlier, before we came on the air, that that I really appreciate Aikido, and it's sort of my favorite martial art. And what I appreciate most is the concept of using other person's momentum to our advantage. How is that aspect of it? Did that have anything to do with how it made its way, you know, to you in dealing with it as something that a writer sort of inhibits your body? Aikido is like, it's our body, but we're using the momentum of other people's body. And I thought that was very interesting that you had a connection between the two of these, because I had never thought about that until I read it in your book.
Let me talk a little bit just about the whole idea of, and maybe I'll get around to that question, central question you have. Okay. But the whole idea of settling in your system and learning how to move from center, you know, learning hara, that place below your navel, that is this physical center of your body, and literally learning how to drop your attention from the head, the overactive head, into the belly. And what a difference that makes in terms of what you're able to receive from another. So like that energy coming toward you, and turn it. And so, I mean, think of that in the writing arena, right? That we're often, what am I going to write about today? Or what's it going to be? How, you know, what am I struggling with? You know, it's often a struggle. And one of the things that I became pretty early on aware of was that if I did, as a writer, if I did drop my attention into my hara, into my belly, I was, rather than trying to think through something, I was feeling into something. And that seems like it is, I think, a much more fertile place as a writer to feel into, instead of scrunch and get all constricted and how will I do this, and, you know, and that goes right back to the Aikido mats and how you learn how to flow with another person's energy and neutralize an attack, right? Aikido's the art of peace, right?
Right.
Yeah. So there's so many parallels, I feel. Yeah.
You know, and as you're saying that, I'm thinking, and I know you talk about essentially a person being able to drop into their body. Mm-hmm. If I increase my ability to drop into my body, explain how that's going to make me a better writer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you hear people talk about writer's block, you know, or I can't find what I'm going to write about, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, to me, that comes from a very constricted place in us, right? And so if I can shift my attention, so I think a lot of what this book, The Writer Who Inhabits Your Body, what it talks about is, how do you shift your attention? How do you literally change your state of consciousness before you write? So you're not taking, well, we take what we have with us to our desk, obviously. Mm-hmm. But there are ways in which you can shift your state of consciousness before you begin to write. You can drop your attention. You can do that move of like, I'm going to drop my attention into my belly. I'm going to feel myself, and I'm going to therefore feel what's outside of myself before I attempt to describe whatever it is, you know, that I'm writing about. So I think that's mainly how it works. You know, the more we can settle in ourselves, the more we can listen both to what's going on inside ourselves, but also what's going on in the world we're writing about.
All right. We have a question that is coming in through instant message. And again, I want to take this time to thank those that send us in questions. Sometimes they come in ahead of time, and my producer, you know, gives them to me ahead of time. And these are often from teachers or people that are working in the middle of the day. And they'll say, you know, I received the press release that you sent out. I don't have the ability to listen in the middle of the day, but please ask this question. And we try to get to all of those. So feel free to send us questions at any time. This one reads, I'm a 24-year-old writer who wants to develop their own embodied writing practice. Other than your book, what are some of the resources or tools that you would recommend? And this is from Candace in Denver, Colorado.
Great question, Candace. Well, definitely my book. I mean, here we are, right? And because, and not just as a joke, but because I do take you through a process, and each chapter has a topic that I discuss, but then it also has a practice at the end of it. So I think that there's that. But there's also, like, I suspect Candace might already have some body-centered practices in her life. That could be anything, right? That could be walking, hiking, a yoga practice, Tai Chi, whatever it is, that you begin to pay attention to how you are in that practice. You know, what is it that, what do you take to say it's yoga? What do you take to the yoga mat? You know, what, maybe you could even get curious about whatever it is you're writing about, and how do I bring that issue to the mat today, literally, right? I think I would start with the practices I'm already in and get curious. Yeah.
What would be a few other ways that centering, as you describe it in your book, that can help someone like Candace, being a as she puts it, a very young writer, but also for someone who's had a great deal of life experience, say an older writer, or someone who's changing careers, and this would be more like me, that, you know, just different ways that we can center ourselves to be able to improve our writing.
Yeah, there's a very fundamental centering practice that I present in the book that comes from Strozzi Somatics, which is the school that I went through when I trained as a somatic coach. And really, it's central, I think, to learning that centering in our body is not just, it's something that asks us to really become more aware of what's going on inside ourselves, but also something that brings in the sense that we can feel into our physical dimensions, so we can feel into our length, our width, and our depth. And while we do that, what we're doing is literally starting that shift into a more centered place in ourselves. And we get curious about that, and we go, what is it like when I feel more length? You know, what is it like? And I notice, you know, okay, I rise up more, I have more space in my vertebrae, between my vertebrae, I feel my dignity more. well, what is that like to feel the dignity of who you are as you sit down to write, right? Mm-hmm. Feeling into your width more, feeling into that place where, you know, to the right and left of you, how can I extend my energy out from this physical body out? And what does that do? You know, mm-hmm. Oh, I start to see peripherally in this space here. I start to feel out into how, maybe how I include other people, how I include the environment. And then I feel into my depth, which is, you know, really both deeply inside myself, but also where am I headed? Where am I headed in my writing? This is for any of us, right? Any of us seasoned writers, beginning writers. I feel into what it is I want to write about. I feel into my history, what's at my back, how I'm supported in that. And that just that is a very central practice to land in yourself, you know, to land in yourself and then to feel out from a place of being present and open and connected and the difference that makes.
Yeah. Well, I also noticed that practices are a big part of your book. And I like how you discuss, you know, you discuss a topic related to writing, and then you provide at least a hands-on practice for each chapter for the reader to engage with. How do you envision or want to see a reader to practice to get the very most out of your book?
Yeah. I mean, my biggest hope would be that body-centered learning is as fascinating to the readers of this book as it has been for me, you know, and because it's a very rich place, I think, of learning and of exploration and discovery. So yeah, each chapter has the topic, but also it's almost like we have to, if we want to change something about how we are being as a person or as a writer or whatever, that we have to start to practice something new, you know, in order for that to take hold. So these practices are, there's the centering practice I described briefly to you. There are other practices that largely come out of Aikido and somatic work. And, you know, there's, for instance, one called the two-step or the Tenkan in Aikido. And it's a step turn. And it's basically taking that centering, you know, in your body into action. And I give reasons why that could help you as you say, go from maybe a job where you have a certain, you know, responsibility, and then you come home and you want to write. Well, how could the two-step help you with that? You know, when we practice, and I talk about this in the book, what we have to be aware of a couple things. And one is like just being really curious and not practicing to be right about something, right? Because we're all going to be clumsy when we first do anything, right? But getting curious about how am I in this practice? Like, what do I notice about how I show up when I practice this new move, you know? So that, and having fun with it, but also, why am I practicing? You know, what's the point of doing this? So we want to bring in like some engagement with ourselves emotionally to make the practice have that kind of heft to it.
Sounds great. We're speaking with Renee Gregorio. The book is called The Writer Who Inhabits Your Body. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Renee, I'd like you to share with us some of your most memorable or transformative experience that you had while writing this book or using the exercises yourself. For everybody out there, you're listening to or you're watching Answers Network. We'll be right back.
Conflict International are experts at uncovering the truth. Our specialist team has decades of experience in providing a range of bespoke investigation and intelligence services to companies and individuals. Whether you need professional screening or background checks of employees, due diligence of potential clients or business partners, asset tracing services, or surveillance, Conflict International has a rapid response team on hand to get you to the heart of the matter. Our key strength is in our global capabilities. We can tap into an extensive network of trusted professional investigators based in most jurisdictions worldwide, enabling us to go almost anywhere a case takes us. Conflict International has decades of experience with a diverse range of skills among our team developed from backgrounds in military and security intelligence services, as well as practice lawyers. Visit our website today at conflictinternational.com to find out more about our services. That's conflictinternational.com. Global reach, local knowledge.
And we're back. We are with Renee Gregorio, and the book is called The Writer Who Inhabits Your Body. When we went to break, I asked Renee, what are some of the most memorable or transformative experiences that you personally had while writing this book or using the exercises that you've put in it?
Thank you for that. I think what led me to even write this book was because of the memorable experiences I've had. So one of the things about body-centered learning, Aikido practice, however you approach it, is the importance of having an observer. So having a teacher on the mats, I have learned so much from letting in what someone else sees in my movement. And one of the first, very startling to me at the time, lessons was about using, one of my clients ended up calling it the habit of effort. So it's like, and she took this idea of when we get, say, grabbed on the Aikido mats, right? Grabbed in life, whatever. What do we do? And a lot of what we can tend to do is use our biceps, use our muscles, tense up, right? And I learned because of my really very good Aikido teacher observing in me that I was, even in a very simple move on the mats, I was using my bicep and I didn't need to use my bicep. And he had a particular way of letting me know that was woke me up, which was, you know, come over and kind of whack me and go, you don't need to use your bicep, you know? And I'm like, well, okay. So if I let go of using it, which is efforting, if I let go of efforting, what takes its place is what comes back to one of your first questions, Ellen, which is that momentum of energy coming at us and joining that energy. So that was a really important piece for me, the effort and the not efforting. And if we don't effort, what then can come in?
Let's tie that part into writing. And that was, was kind of where my brain is going into, because, you know, and I understand the part about, so, you know, the momentum that's coming against us, and you're right, in so many things where there's a physical situation, it is our initial thought to tense up, or to, again, to use our muscles to keep this from happening. And the part about the flow, you know, the person that's coming at you, the flow to learn how to turn and then to make movement and sort of help them past you or whatever. I thought that was so interesting to see that as writing, or as you mentioned before about a writing block. How can I get the flow, and am I causing my own block because I'm tensing up or I'm trying to work against something that's there?
Right. So I think it's, it all comes back to that place of practice, right? So the more, and why I think the body is central to this, is the more that I can understand, really understand, not in my mind, but through my whole system, that what I'm doing is efforting or using my bicep, the metaphor of that, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm at my desk, right, and I'm struggling with a poem, a story, whatever, this book, you know, rather than, first of all, noticing, oh, there I go. You know, right. This is what I do, knowing what each of us does something different, right? So, but knowing your own pattern of tightening and literally, you know, getting up and doing a centering practice or doing a two-step or walking outside or taking in what's separate from you, separate from that, observing, you know, the natural environment and letting yourself feel it. All those ways of like shifting again your state of consciousness. So it's not the tightening, it's the allowing the flow. But knowing that in mm-hmm. allowing the flow at our desk might be, oh, I'm open to receiving. I'm listening, right? And I'm opening to receiving whatever it is that wants to move through me in the form of language, you know, so.
Right. So I'm going to think of it. There's maybe one of my own issues in the same sense of what you're saying, in a way of letting something flow to go through me, or the metaphor of using my muscles. If I'm stuck and I am working on a particular project, and that project is fiction, and then but I also have a nonfiction project, and what I'll find myself is I'll be stuck on something, and in my frustration, anyway, I'll think of something else, and then all of a sudden my attention will focus to something else. And then I'll start going in a different direction. So now I'm on, say, for instance, now a nonfiction project. Mm-hmm. Is that me utilizing my muscles, but going in the wrong direction? And how do I get that to where I let that kind of flow through me so that I can stay focused on the topic that I'm trying to remain on?
Yeah. What I was going to say when you first started speaking was that it sounded like more of an issue of focus, you know, more of an issue of, okay, I'm working on this piece and then this other thing comes in, so I'll go follow that. Maybe better to stay with where you began, you know,
right.
I mean, really following that through. And I don't know, you know, not knowing enough about you, but I don't know if it could also be about being direct and developing a sense of I'm going to really cut to the chase here, or I'm going to really look at this completely straight on, you know, and I'm going to stay with this until the whole thought is through, or the whole, you know, and then I can move over here.
Right. And kind of what I was, yeah, kind of what I was getting from it when you mentioned about get up, tap dance, do something else. You know, if that's the part that was allowing the flow or whatever it is that took me off, you know, off subject at that moment, to get up, tap dance or whatever, is that sort of metaphorically allowing that issue to pass, or me not muscling up to try to fight it, but get up, do that, and then come back when I can stay on that particular topic.
Exactly.
Fiction right. versus the nonfiction.
Right. So, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
I like
following.
That
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
So and there was another thing that I'd gotten again from going through the book, because I'm someone, I read Daniel Goleman's Emotional Intelligence. And I know that we often think about intelligence as being mind-based. But after reading his book, what is the sort of intelligence you refer to when you wrote the phrase, the belly is a source of knowing, or the belly is a source of knowledge. Share with me a little bit about that, how that ties in with emotional intelligence.
Yeah, I think that they're not, it's not that they're operating vastly differently. Emotional intelligence, and I might say this belly knowing, or you could say somatic intelligence, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they're both about being more cognizant of our emotional life and being more self-aware and being compassionate and empathetic. You know, emotional intelligence talks a lot about those qualities. And this more belly-centered somatic intelligence, all of those things also come to the surface. We become more self-aware and more open, more permeable, more able to see wider, to get out of our own way, and to be connected to what's outside of ourselves. But we're doing it through the body, not through the mind, right? I mean, our mind is, I think, all over our body, right? It exists everywhere in us. It's in our gut. It's in our heart. You know, so it's that separation is, it doesn't even make sense anymore, you know? So somatic intelligence, I mean, the Japanese have a term called hara, again, being that center of the body, harage, which is the art of the belly. So, you know, they have this whole belief system in how much knowledge there is. Literally, if we drop into our belly, right, drop our attention and focus there, something else is available to us in terms of intelligence. I feel you. And think of the Aikido mats or even a really good conversation. I feel you from belly to belly. You know, the harage would say that, right? I can tell what you're going to do if I'm really good at that because I sense it. So it's a much more deeply sensing intelligence. Yeah.
Another thing that came out of the book, and as someone who, as a younger person, spent quite a bit of time in dojos, you write a lot about dojos in the book. And you even suggest that the book itself could be looked at as a dojo. Share the correlation that you find in this.
Yeah. So dojo being a place of learning, a place of awakening, a sacred space. You know, I always remember walking into the Aikido dojo and literally crossing that threshold and becoming, you know, changing my clothes, becoming ready to learn, you know, ready to see something I didn't see before, to feel something I didn't know before. To me, a dojo can be anywhere. It's a declared space. So it's saying, there's an Aikido dojo or many number of martial arts dojos. But also, the dojo, I can say this writing space I'm in right here is a dojo. If I declare that when I walk into this space, I value it in a particular way, I say to myself, something's going to happen in here. You know, I'm declaring that this is a place where I'm going to learn and grow and change and write my ass off, you know? I mean, so that's a dojo. The book is a dojo because, you know, we're learning. It's a learning community. That's the other piece of it. We're together. We're learning. In the dojo of the book, there are practices. There's a teacher, you know, so usually that's the case with the dojo, too.
Well, and another one of the things that I also in getting from the book and why I thought it was very interesting when you referred to it as a dojo is, from the moment we would walk into a dojo, there was structure.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. and what I felt in the book was that from the moment I started reading it, there was structure.
Mm.
And you know, again, there was structure, there was example, there were things that made me feel, again, kind of that same feeling of, okay, when I sit down and when I read this book, I'm going to be in a more structured environment, which also I felt could be very helpful. And it made me start thinking about when I would be writing, because in the past, mm-hmm. I've written in situations, but it was when I could buy time, because yeah. I was doing so many other things. And I'd think, somebody'd say, I've got this meeting and that meeting, and I've got 30 minutes. And so I would just kind of grab the time. Yeah. But it wasn't really structured. You know, it was because I thought I had 30 minutes, or I thought I had an hour. Mm-hmm. So the feeling that I got was that I think one of the things that will improve my writing is to stay in structure and mm-hmm. to structure the time and say, you know, I'm going to write from this time to this time, and I'm going to be in this environment. It's going to be a quieter environment, mm-hmm. you know, as opposed to, you know, if I was, you know, traveling or something like that, and my flight is delayed. And so I'd go, okay, this is a good time. And I'd pull out my laptop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the environment, there was so little structure there, because I'm paying attention for when they're going to announce something yep. that might have to do with my flight. And I'd realize that many of those times I'd look back at what I wrote and go, I don't like it.
Yep.
I think it had to yep. do with structure. So again, that was the feeling that I got, which I really appreciated.
I love that. I love that. And it makes me also think about two words that used to come to me in Aikido dojo, but also in writing, our writing dojo, rigor, right? Mm-hmm. Rigor. So where do we get to walk through a door and, you know, have the sensei, you know, demanding things of us and moving us in a particular way we might not move ourselves? And so there's rigor, and there's, beside that, though, compassion, right? A good Aikido dojo, a good writing dojo. I think those qualities are really crucial, because we have to be kind of rigorous with ourselves to get words yep. down on a page, right? And then and we also have to be kind, you know, because it's a very challenging space, as, you know, you've described. And yeah, I think writing is a challenging space.
All right. We're going to take another break. But when we come back, what I'd love to do is have you talk a little bit about listening, because I know that you feature it a lot in the book. And it's not something that I think people immediately think about when they think about good writing or even becoming more centered. So for everybody, stay with us. We'll be talking about that soon. You're listening to, or you're watching, Answers Network. Having a teenager at risk who is going through a traumatic experience can be difficult on parents, siblings, and all who are working with that young person. No family should have to go through this process alone. West Shield Adolescent Services is here to ensure you don't have to. Many of the psychologists and psychiatrists we work with have spoken about the stress families go through. Not just the young person, but the parents needing to get their child to a program where they can get the help they need. West Shield aims to lessen that stress. Every case goes through a thorough intake process with one of our knowledgeable, compassionate intake coordinators. We want to know the likes, the dislikes, and the fears of each child. This important information is taken into consideration when choosing the best suited team member for each individual teenager. West Shield agents come from all different walks of life, giving us a diverse group of team members to ensure a personalized, compassionate experience for every teenager. This allows us to make certain every young person we work with gets to the chosen program in the best possible state of mind. We contacted over 600 of the youth we've worked with in the past to see where they're at now. 97% of these individuals told us how much their lives had improved, that they had better relationships with their friends and families, had gone on to marry, have kids, and were now using the skills they learned in their program to raise their own children.
Our role of transporting at-risk teenagers is a vital step in the process of ensuring a youth's ability to thrive in their new environment, and is a role we don't take lightly. The recovery process can be a long one, but like any journey, it started with a single step.
And we're back. We are speaking with Renee Gregory. I'm sorry, Gregorio. But her book is The Writer Who Inhabits Your Body. And when we went to break, we spoke a little bit about listening, because I know that, again, I mean, you've featured the listening, you know, as a phenomenal skill in your book. But can you talk about what listening has to do with writing and furthering how our bodies can inform that type of listening?
I think that one of the challenges for a lot of us, I know I had it, is to really be with our silence, really be with silence, be able to settle ourselves enough to just be quiet. You know, our culture doesn't really teach us how to do that, I don't think. And I think that a lot of writing isn't really recording. It isn't so much, I say this in the book, it isn't so much recording what we know, but it's listening to hear what we don't know and to get that down on paper. So it's like, I think writing really requires us to settle enough to get to this depth of ability to listen. And we're listening, and I've said this earlier, I think we're listening both inside ourselves and outside of ourselves. And the skill is really about, it's really about, like, if we take a principle from Aikido, which is extension, right? Where we extend our energy. You see my arms going out, and I'm extending energy through my hand. I'm extending. And if you think of extending as a kind of listening, So as I extend, right, I'm extending out to, you know, the land beyond my window there. I'm extending so that I can feel it more and listen in that way. So that's like not just listening with our ears, right? We're trying to listen with our whole system, right, as writers. Does that elucidate at all the listening?
Yes, it does. Again, as we were coming out of break, a message was coming in. So, and I think Good. Everybody will kind of see where I may have made a little mistake. This one reads, as a single father of two teenagers, I have had great difficulty finding the time to relax and write, which I love dearly. How do you balance the physical, emotional, and mental aspects of writing? And how do you deal with criticism or feedback, which I get at times from family members? And this is from Gregory in Houston.
Wow. That is a question.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I think there's several questions in there, right?
Yeah, but there's at least two good ones.
So let's go to dealing with criticism.
Okay.
And how that, trying to think of one of the things that I do talk about in this book is support and being able to feel what support, what, first of all, to ask yourself, what do I need in terms of support? And then to be able to bring in that field of support or those literal other human beings who do support your writing, your whatever, right? And bringing them right in, you know, like I remember having a client once who made a group, like a literal poster of her readers who supported her as she was writing her book, You know, and she had them there, photographs, whatever they were, with her, in her writing dojo so that she could readily refer to it. So I think that it's really hard to receive criticism when you're trying to get something out. It's like that needs to be a critic-free zone, I think, the initial stages of expression. And so I wouldn't show it to people who were going to criticize me at that point. Choose well, yeah. You know? Choose well and feel that support.
I think that's a great point. And before we go to his other questions, yeah. I'd like to add to that, because it said, how do you deal with criticism or feedback? So mm-hmm. what you dealt with the criticism part. I'd like to deal with the feedback part. Okay. And the best way that I can put that is that with the first project that I wrote, I showed it to friends, mm-hmm. and I got really positive feedback. And then I was on an airplane, and the person sitting next to me was a very good writer, somebody who had written for television and movies. And we started talking, and I asked him if he would read my script. And he did. And in a very, very nice way, he pointed out that what was wrong with it. So mm-hmm. he gave criticism, but he did it in a very nice way. Mm-hmm. And we ended up becoming writing partners from it. But mm-hmm. the thing it was what I realized was that it's who's reading it. And if they are criticizing it, do they have the knowledge to even be critical?
Yeah.
So in this case, what I realized was my friends didn't want to hurt my feelings. So they told me it was wonderful.
Yeah.
And somebody who really understood writing and what it took to get something on the air or on the screen mm-hmm. Was able to give feedback on what was positive and where it needed help, and then eventually became a writing partner with me that allowed us to now make something much better. So if yes. those are two things that you can take from this, Gregory, as Renee is saying, how to deal with criticism, but also there's ways to deal with feedback, I think, as well. So you don't put too much into it that you get from friends that don't want to hurt your feelings either.
Yeah. I think, and feedback too is so crucial. You know, I think mm-hmm. that, in the writing of this book, I sent chapters out to quite a large group of coaching friends who I knew, as you said, you want someone who has a certain take, who knows the work, who can provide a certain kind of feedback, right? And then it's always up to you as the writer too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm glancing at the time. We've got about 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. Can you give him a little bit of advice on how to balance the physical, emotional, and mental aspects of writing in when you're in a situation, in this case, a single father raising yeah. two teenagers, what's some advice you could give him to be able to set aside time? It sounds like he's having trouble setting aside time and being able to feel relaxed to write intelligently.
Yeah. It's such a challenge. And I think we're all we're also different in what we require as writers to get the writing out. And I know for me, I require a lot of solitude and quiet. But I have had friends, really good writers, who are raising children, who have said to me, "Okay, I dropped my kid off at school, and I'm in the car, and I have 15 minutes, and I'm going. I'm taking that time." Mm-hmm. I think that's very challenging, but I don't think it's impossible. And I think the ideas we were talking about earlier could serve here with, this is my writing dojo. This, I'm stepping, anything you need to do imaginatively to say, I'm taking this time, and maybe even having a series of topics that could be dealt with, or a series of questions mm-hmm. for yourself, right? That could be dealt with in shorter writing spaces. So when you, that's all you have, you can go there and feel like, okay, I got 10 minutes in, and they're actually very productive 10 minutes. Yeah.
And I'd also like to add that I felt that you touched on some of these areas as well in the book. Mm-hmm. So for Gregory, I think that could also be very helpful. Mm-hmm. I'm glancing and realizing mm-hmm. that unfortunately we're out of time. So Renee, I think that if anybody still has questions for you, what would be mm-hmm. the best way for them to get in touch with you? And am I correct in assuming that the book can be purchased pretty much anywhere books are sold?
Yes, it can be. And it's officially out tomorrow. So I think
perfect timing.
Yes.
Perfect yeah. timing.
And for me, I mean, you can feel free to, my website is ReneeGregorio.com and my email's there. And yeah.
Okay. Well, that would be mm-hmm. great. And again, if you're driving out there, we'll make sure we have that information in the show notes in regards to the spelling and such. Renee, thank you so much for not only writing a book that gives us another way to look at our writing and another way that we can improve our writing and really make it more heartfelt. And I appreciate that very much, as well as coming on the show and sharing with us.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you. Enjoyed it.
All right. And yeah. for everybody, again, be with us next week. Be with us every week, or just go to our archives of past interviews at Answers Network. Or you can just subscribe to the show through Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, Rumble, Spreaker, and so many other popular podcast platforms. You can just subscribe to it, and it'll get sent to you automatically. Go to our website at Answers Network, and you can pick which one you'd like. And I just really would like everybody to just go out there. Do some things that you can pay forward to make a positive difference in the world for other people. And you can do it by just being good human beings. And we hope that you'll be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.